Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Last Birthday Party by Gary Goldstein, narrated by Gary Bennett. So if you're tired of the same old story, oh, turn some pages. REO Speedwagon. Chapter 1. Jeremy knew the birthday party was a bad idea. He just didn't know how bad. First of all, 50 did not seem like something to celebrate. Endure, maybe. Elude, definitely. Lie about? Well, Jeremy wasn't big on lying. It's just easier to tell the truth, he'd contend, whenever Cassie wanted to concoct some excuse for, say, begging off dinner with the neighbors. But lie about this? Maybe. Yeah. Either way, throwing a party and inviting most everyone they knew seemed like asking for trouble. "Did anyone ever tell you you're a stick in the mud?" Cassie asked, when he swatted away her notion of a Jeremy's turning the big 5-0 bash, well-meaning as it may have been. It wasn't, actually. It was something completely else, which he would soon find out. "No, babe, only you," Jeremy responded, attempting to sound light and unbothered, which, it may go without saying, he did not. But really, what did his wife expect? She was the one who liked being the center of attention, not him. She was the one who was always first to sing karaoke at any party, while he'd rather hide behind the drapes or under a table. She was the one who would wave into the TV cameras if they were walking past a movie premiere. This was L.A., after all. While he would suddenly have to tie a shoe. She was the one who would talk in her outside voice when she wanted to prove a point indoors, like restaurant or movie theater indoors, while Jeremy would have used ASL to argue, if only he knew how to sign. He was also the first to admit Cassie was who you wanted on your side in a fight. Maybe she wanted a birthday party. Maybe she wanted to celebrate the smack dab middle of her own life. Middle, that is, if one were going to live to be 100, which, at that moment, just sounded exhausting. The only problem, Cassie was going to be 49, and who throws a birthday party with all the trimmings for turning 49? In truth, Cassie would have every year if Jeremy would have let her. Also in truth, he was a bit of a stick in the mud, but not enough, apparently, because Cassie convinced him to have a party. Convinced him 50 was a milestone to be commemorated, not ignored. And much as he may want to let the day come and go without anyone knowing how old he was, and was it really that old in the scheme of things? Cassie reminded him that no one's age was a secret anymore. Cassie also promised she wouldn't go overboard. Just close friends and family, their backyard, a Sunday afternoon if Saturday night felt too serious. Hell, she'd even cook instead of cater so Jeremy wouldn't worry about the money. To which Jeremy thought, as he always did, well, somebody had to worry. But he didn't say it because, you know, stick. Mud. Still, something felt off about the whole thing. And if Jeremy learned anything in his, yikes, 49 years and 47 weeks, it was to trust his instincts. First thought that flies into your head about something? Pay attention. Listen. Act. He was rarely wrong about those pesky red flags, those instant warning signs that went right to his stomach. But he was also happy to admit if he was wrong, relieved when the shit didn't hit the fan, or at least didn't hit it as hard as he expected. This was not one of those times. First of all, Saturday night won out, with Cassie deeming the event too special for a Sunday, steamrolling her original selling points and boxing in Jeremy, who decided not to put on the gloves for that one. Second, close friends and family somehow morphed into everyone Jeremy and Cassie had ever met, or at least that's how it felt to someone, like Jeremy, who didn't want a party to begin with. Who was there? Joyce, Jeremy's mom. Dead. More later. Still a force of nature at 84. His and Cassie's son, Maddie, and Maddie's new boyfriend, Sven. Or was it Lars? Cassie's parents, the cranky Rhea and contrary Henry, Cassie's adjectives, not Jeremy's. He rather liked them. You didn't grow up with them, Cassie would counter. Jeremy's editor, Lucian, and Lucian's third wife, Bonita, Cassie's lawyer buddies, Ella and Sunil, and Ella's wife, Jasmine, Cassie's best friend since high school, Valeria, and her husband, Norm, who was, one could say, Jeremy's best friend by marriage, or default. Though, strangely, the four rarely did anything together. And Cassie and Jeremy's new next-door neighbors, Katie and Crash, real name Cyrus, wouldn't you change it too? Who were young enough to be their children. Well, if Cassie got pregnant in high school. Oh, and about 50 other people, which was around 45 more than Jeremy would have liked, and 45 fewer than Cassie would have liked. So, in her mind, she had compromised. Is everyone's marriage such a tug of war? Wondered the rope-burned Jeremy. Cassie never had to ask. She knew the answer was an unequivocal yes, and so be it. Without Jeremy's knowledge, Cassie knew he'd balk, and she was right. Invites went out to second-tier friends and neighbors, random cousins and co-workers, and assorted acquaintances, yoga classmates for Cassie, fellow film critics for Jeremy. Looking around the party, Jeremy could swear he didn't know, or didn't want to know, three-quarters of them. Needless to say, Cassie didn't cook that night. Bristol Farms did, and delivered, set up, served, and bartended. Maybe the bartender, a tattooed hunk with a heavy hand, was a separate line item. Jeremy never got to ask. And the gathering, which nominally began in their backyard, soon swelled, spread, and snaked throughout the house. There was music. A DJ friend of Maddie's did the honors and appropriately played a lot of early MTV hits. But to Jeremy, and it should be said, only Jeremy, it all seemed ridiculously over the top. That night, he felt way older than his 50 years, especially when he realized his mother spent about quadruple the time on the makeshift dance floor as he did. The good news, there was no karaoke. Jeremy, despite the two-drink limit he'd self-imposed ages ago following an incident involving mezcal shooters and a reunion of his writing students, kept topping off his wine glass all night. This, Jeremy later learned, did not make him the most amenable host, even if he did manage to banter with lots of people, most of whom wanted to know if he'd seen any good movies lately, perhaps his least favorite question. He'd instantly blank on every recent film title, as if his reviews had been written in disappearing ink. The other prevailing question that night was, "Are you okay?" Which any remotely self-conscious person can tell you is a surefire road to feeling not okay. Somewhere along the way, it also occurred to the birthday boy that he and his wife had not spoken to each other the entire night, and when they finally did interact, it didn't go well. Something about Jeremy seeming ungrateful, which, he'd be the first to tell you, and not proudly, mind you, he was. What kind of asshole doesn't appreciate the kind of effort put out on his behalf, whether he wanted a party or not? That might have remained an existential, and let's face it, totally fair, question, had Cassie not verbalized it just so the second the last guest exited their backyard. By then, it was also a contest as to which of the lovebirds had drunk more that night, with Cassie, as usual, holding her liquor better than Jeremy by a tipsy mile. This didn't make for the most coherent or effective arguing, which may be why Jeremy, to this day, remains kinda hazy about their fight. Had he known how pivotal it would be, he might have struggled to pay more attention to her words, instead of stumbling back into the house, locking the den door behind him, dropping onto the couch, and passing out into a dead man's sleep. The next morning, Cassie was gone. Chapter 2. Not like gone to the store, or to yoga, or to the office for a Sunday emergency. But clothes gone, jewelry gone, photos gone, and French press and milk frother. Really? Gone. This, of course, took Jeremy a while to realize, much less process, arising as he did at an ungodly late 10 a.m., and frankly surprised to find he was still in his party clothes. His body felt like he'd been hit by a truck. But it turned out that truck was idling beyond the den door waiting to finish him off altogether. The kitchen looked exceptionally clean, given the mountain of celebration-centric pots, pans, dishes, glasses, serving trays, and utensils that, if Jeremy remembered correctly, needed washing the night before. He didn't immediately spot the missing coffee maker and milk frother, though he did peek into the refrigerator and thought there wasn't much food left given how much there seemed to be last night, and that he needed to ask Cassie what the final Bristol Farms bill was. And weren't those sushi platters, which had been polished off before he ever got to them, a little extravagant? Padding down the narrow rear hallway of the Laurel Canyon bungalow he and Cassie had bought in their third year of marriage, using the proceeds from the one screenplay Jeremy ever sold as a down payment, it struck him how quiet it was. Not even the usual hardwood floor creaks heralding his arrival into the master bedroom. "Cassie? Cassie?" He knocked on the closed bathroom door, called for her again, but there was silence. Jeremy gently opened the door. Nothing to see but his electric shaver still recharging where he'd plugged it in the afternoon before. It didn't yet hit him that a circle of water on the shower shelf remained where Cassie's bottle of tea tree oil shampoo normally stood. He walked back into the bedroom, and that's where he saw it, taped to the full-length mirror on the walk-in closet door. A note in Cassie's loopy, slightly exaggerated script. "I love you, but I can't live with you. We are not good for each other anymore. Do not call or text or try to find me. I'm sorry, and I hope you are too." Jeremy peered at the message, as if its words might rearrange themselves to say something far more innocuous. But they stubbornly hung there like little stick pins, ready to gouge out his eyes should he get any closer. "I'm sorry, and I hope you are too." Tug of war. He reflexively backed away and let this terrible and not so entirely shocking news wash over him. The party. Shards of their argument began to ricochet around his cobwebby head. Adjectives like selfish and dismissive and impossible echoing about, though Jeremy couldn't be sure who said what. They were, after all, words that could apply to either one of them. Still, given that he was the one left sitting there alone, it was a good bet he was the recipient of said invectives. Deservedly so, he might add. But enough to drive Cassie to simply up and leave? Jeremy fell back onto the pillows he and Cassie shared on the bed they'd shared for years and years. He on the right side, she on the left, never once switching sides, seemingly happy in their prescribed spaces. Happy? More like habitually content. How's that? Not good enough, clearly. He stretched his legs through the down comforter, that heavy-ass monster, over his chilled body, and huddled into its warmth. His teeth chattered like he'd been dipped in ice, and, for a flash, Jeremy felt like his heart might actually stop. But the feeling passed as quickly as it appeared, and as he tried to conjure up more of his dreamlike battle with Cassie, he once again gave in to sleep. "Dad, what's going on? Did I wake you?" It was Maddie calling, waking his father, who had grabbed his phone off his bedside table. Jeremy focused. "What time is it?" "I don't know, 11-something. Dad, I got this weird text from Mom. Is she okay?" Jeremy glanced at the note still dangling from the closet door mirror, unreadable from the bed, but its meaning as clear and confusing as ever. "What did it say?" Jeremy asked. "Don't worry about me, just call your father. I'll be in touch." "That's it?" Jeremy sat up, swallowed hard, his mouth tasting like a melted spoon. He got out of bed and started walking in circles. "Dad, is she there? Would you put her on?" "She is decidedly not here." Circle, circle, breath. "Honey, I think your mother left me." Jeremy still called his adult son Honey, a holdover from when Maddie was a little boy, the most beautiful and magical child one could imagine, at least to his adoring parents. There was a Honey moratorium right after Maddie's bar mitzvah, at the 13-year-old's request. "Dad, it's weird." but it slipped back into Jeremy's patter a few years later, without comment or incident.
"Are you fucking kidding me?"
Maddie asked, voice rising with each word. "No, son, I don't believe I am."
"Fuck.
Are you okay? Dad, you were kind of hammered last night, you know that?"
"I do know. I know a lot of things now."
"And Mom's really not there?
Want me to text you a copy of the note she left me?"
"No, I want to see it in person. See you in person. I'll be right over."
Maddie hung up before Jeremy could protest.
"Mom seemed so happy at the party," Maddie recalled when he arrived an hour later. "She danced with me twice, Sven once, and then the two of us together."
So his name was Sven. Jeremy couldn't keep up. His son was, to be charitable, a serial dater, which at 23 wasn't the worst thing. But like so much else with Maddie, he had a little follow-through problem with relationships. Fortunately, he was so charismatic, confident, and effortlessly handsome that his boyfriend seemed to overlook his lack of romantic longevity, just to be in his sphere for as long as it lasted. Still, as Jeremy took no pleasure in predicting, the tables might one day turn on Maddie, and it'd be quite the rude awakening.
"I didn't want the party, you know."
"Well, that kind of sucks, doesn't it? I mean, it was a lot of work for her, right?"
Maddie shook two equals into the coffee Jeremy brewed up in their drip coffee maker, in lieu of the French press that had taken its leave, along with his wife of 25 years.
"Talk to me when you turn 50, kiddo."
Jeremy sat across from Maddie at the glass kitchen table he and Cassie had had since their first apartment, a cramped if sunny love nest in Silver Lake. "Look at all those scratches," he thought. "Why had they never replaced it? Did it have some sentimental value Jeremy had no memory of? Or were they just too lazy to change it?" Maybe he might have been, but not Cassie. She was the least lazy person Jeremy had ever known. "No grass grows under that one's feet," his mother noted, just after one lunch with her future daughter-in-law. It stood to reason, then, that Cassie would be the one to exit their marriage. But why did it take so long?
"Dad, are you freaked out? I mean, Mom's just fucking with you, isn't she?"
"Fucking with me?" Jeremy and Cassie rarely censored their son, let him be and say and do what came to mind. But it still jarred Jeremy when Maddie talked to him like one of his buddies, even if Maddie considered his father, and his mother, only slightly less so, as much a friend as a parent.
"You read her note. You know as much as I do."
Jeremy sipped some coffee. It was surprisingly smooth. He never liked that French press, so why did he continue to use it?
"Yeah, I doubt that," said Maddie, eyeballing his coffee cup.
"Is there any almond milk? I'm done with dairy."
"We have almonds and we have milk. That's it."
Jeremy knew Maddie, ice cream maven that he was, would be back on dairy before next weekend. The kid was lucky he worked out like a fiend, the one thing he was consistent about.
"And what do you mean you doubt that?"
"I mean, these things just don't happen overnight.
Not really, right?"
Maddie swallowed his black coffee and grimaced. He glanced at his father.
"Dad, I've lived with the two of you for 21 years. I saw stuff. So I have my opinions, but, well, only you and Mom can really know."
Jeremy gazed into his cup, not sure he really knew much of anything at the moment. His thoughts a maze of good times and bum times, hat tip to Sondheim, with the woman who he once couldn't properly breathe without, the extroverted yin to his more circumspect yang, a force long the conduit to all things good and meaningful. And just like that, a ghost.
"Every couple goes through things. Doesn't mean they have to split up over it," said Jeremy, more to himself than to his son. He sounded detached and unconvincing.
"Dad, did you even try to call her?"
"She told me not to."
Jeremy looked away from Maddie's penetrating gaze, flummoxed, judgmental, sympathetic. Jeremy hated disappointing anyone, especially his boy. But he did so anyway.
"This would seem like a good time not to follow instructions," Maddie told his father, pushing away his cup.
"Did you call her?"
Jeremy asked in a challenge as he studied his son. Maddie was a perfect cross between his parents. Jeremy's rangy height, Roman nose, floppy carob brown hair, getting grayer on Jeremy by the month. Cassie's blue-green eyes, olive skin, full lips. Maddie's toothy smile was all his own doing. A text like that? Of course I called her, Maddie answered. I got voicemail. We had a fight after the party, said Jeremy. I don't remember a lot about it. I was shit-faced, I know. You were pounding that Pinot like crazy. What was up with that, Mr. Two Drink Maximum? Maddie grabbed his coffee cup off the table, splashed some cow milk into it, and took a more satisfying swallow. It seemed like the best way to get through the night, Jeremy admitted, and apparently end a marriage. Well, I thought it was a really fun party, and so did Sven, who's not a big party guy. Maddie took a seat again, glanced at his cell, slipped it in her pocket. You must have some idea why she took off. And isn't the guy supposed to move out? I mean, in a hetero marriage? Maddie snuck another look at his phone, smiled this time, tapped a few keys. Jeremy watched his son, envious. He was so much less complicated, more guileless than either of his parents. Was it generational or accidental? I guess it depends how much the woman wants out, answered Jeremy, realizing the thought, like so many others, hadn't yet crossed his mind. But you are gonna call Mom, yes? Jeremy was silent, had absolutely no immediate idea. No, Dad, seriously, you two have to talk. I mean, like, this is major. Gee, you think? Jeremy was instantly sorry for the sarcasm. His son was just trying to help a helpless situation. Sorry, honey. I'm really at a loss right now. Jeremy rose, poured himself a second cup of coffee, his hands shaking, and not imperceptibly. Maddie studied his father. You're in shock, Pop. I get it. Just let it sink in and, you know, figure out what to do. Because you can't do nothing. I don't know. Nothing sounds pretty good right now. Maddie drained his coffee cup. I gotta go. Meeting Sven at the gym. It's leg day. He struck a mocked, pained expression, which made Jeremy laugh in spite of himself. Unless you need me to stay, for moral support, or, I don't know, to make sure you don't do something stupid. Looks like you're too late for that, kiddo. Maddie grabbed his dad in a bear hug. Jeremy pulled the kid in close, held on to him for dear life, then kissed his forehead and sent him on his way. Whatever Jeremy and Cassie may have done wrong, they did one thing right. Chapter 3. Jeremy thought about what Maddie had said, about this not being the time to follow instructions, specifically Cassie's. So after bits of lunch cobbled together from the Bristol Farm's leftovers, Jeremy had to admit the Cajun shrimp was pretty great. Was it wrong that he even had an appetite? He decided to call Cassie. What was she going to do, just disappear off the face of the earth? She had a son, parents, a younger sister. Okay, living in Santa Fe with her sculpturing spouse, but still. A job, co-workers, friends, and, much as she might like to think otherwise, a husband. Soon to be ex, though he may be. She had to resurface, and one would guess, soon. Then again, if Cassie wanted attention, and the lady liked her share, this was a good way to get it. Jeremy had no idea what he was going to say if she answered, though he figured he was entitled to pretty much any civil question given her uncivil departure. But like Maddie, Jeremy got Cassie's voicemail, on which she sounded far too bubbly given the turn of events. What, did he expect she'd swap out her greeting for something glum and remorseful? He was about to leave a message, say something for God's sake, but got weirdly self-conscious and tongue-tied and hung up. Fuck, Jeremy thought. She'll see my number under missed calls anyway. That was stupid. No, Jeremy realized. What was stupid was that he had spent half his life with this woman. More than half. They were together 2 years before the wedding. Knew a million little things about her. Things he was certain he and only he knew. and he was standing there, frozen, with the phone still in his unsteady hand. Fuck that, he thought, and started to dial Cassie again, until he stopped midway and put down the phone altogether. Maddie was right. Jeremy was in shock. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. Still, he thought, he should probably call someone else, tell someone else, like his mother. She'd have something smart and fair to say, as usual. No, he didn't want to involve her just yet. Though maybe he'd feel better, or at least feel something. It helped to talk to Maddie, didn't it? He should have told Maddie to stick around, forego the gym, keep his old man company. But that wasn't Jeremy's style. He hated asking people for things, even those closest to him, always preferring to do for himself, never wanting to put others out. That's how he became so handy with a toolbox. Why bug someone else when you could do it yourself? Cassie, who certainly had her own self-sufficient streak, said people sometimes thought Jeremy was a little detached, a little cool, and not in a laid-back or hip way either. But it didn't seem to bother her. She'd even flagged it as a plus soon after they met, that unusually balmy October night outside the New Beverly Cinema, a storied revival theater on a busy stretch of L.A.'s Beverly Boulevard. Jeremy had gone by himself to see a double bill of Risky Business and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, two of his favorite movies from childhood that he'd never actually seen in a theater. Cassie was just walking past on her way, he'd later learn, to a yoga class being held at a nearby studio. Jeremy was about to buy his ticket when he saw this attractive, lissome woman moving toward him. She didn't look like a moviegoer. Maybe it was her athletic wear or the purposeful way she bounded up the block, with barely a glance at the film nerds and hipsters swirling around the box office. Their eyes met, and she stopped short in front of Jeremy, gave him a once-over, and asked, "What's playing?" "Risky Business and Fast Times at Ridgemont High," Jeremy said, pointing at the display posters. "You're paying to see those?" she asked, with no small amount of incredulity. "How old are they now, anyway?" 1982 and 1983, Jeremy answered, checking out her honey-blonde ponytail and glowing skin, but caught himself before his gaze made its way any further south. "Ever seen them?" "I think so, somewhere along the line. Risky Business is the one with the Porsche, right?" "Accept no substitutes," Jeremy said with a sly grin. She smiled back, maybe got the reference, maybe not. "Do you like movies?" he asked, just to keep things going. Though anyone who wasn't totally sure they saw a movie as memorable as Risky Business couldn't be much of a film fan. She studied Jeremy with his thick, longish hair, three-day growth, soulful eyes, and USC film school sweatshirt. "Not as much as you, I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm kind of a diehard. I should probably see more movies. You know, new movies, just to keep up." Glancing at the movie posters, the shrinking ticket line, then back at Jeremy, she moved in a step closer. "I wholeheartedly recommend it." Even Jeremy, self-effacer that he was, could tell she was dawdling. Okay, he had his opening. Did he want to take it? My God, look at her. Did he even have to ask? He could feel the window closing. "Don't think, man. Act." As his pulse raced and his breath shortened, he made his move. "We should go sometime." "When?" she asked, with a slight challenge in her voice Jeremy found both startling and startlingly sexy. He took a stab. "This Sunday? What do you want to see?" "Another challenge?" Jeremy scanned the living movie guide permanently lodged in his head. "Have you seen The Joy Luck Club?" As she considered the title, Jeremy wondered if she'd even heard of it. Should he have picked something more fun, more mindless? "No, have you?" she asked. "I did, yeah, but I'd see it again. It was great." It was worth a second viewing, but what she didn't need to know was that Jeremy never took a first date to a film he hadn't already seen. He didn't want any on-screen surprises to spoil the mood. In high school, he'd taken a girl he wanted to impress to see the teen vampire flick The Lost Boys. It sounded cool. Everyone was going to see it. But the movie was kind of icky in parts. Who knew his date had an aversion to work?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?